mornings. I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, 83rd District Representative Ty Matthews shares reaction to Governor DeWine's State of the State address last week and discusses his role as vice chairman of the newly formed Doge Caucus in the Ohio House. Also this morning, it's Spring Severe Weather Awareness Week in Ohio. Time to review your emergency plan and prepare for severe storms, tornadoes, floods, and more. And the U.S. Postal Service has launched a campaign reminding drivers to play it safe around their 250,000 delivery vehicles that are on the road every day. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Monday, March 17th, 2025. So I have it here in my hand. I am filling out my bracket here this morning. The Ohio State men's basketball team did not make the March Madness field. They were among the first four teams out, so just missed it. Missed it by that much. From what I understand, they're going to play in this new inaugural tournament out in Las Vegas. And Well, if the football season was any indication, I mean, it was the first for a new playoff format in football, and Ohio State did pretty well. So maybe with this first tournament out in Vegas, it's a 16-team playoff tournament out in Vegas that I guess Ohio State will go to, that maybe it'll work out for the Buckeyes as well. I don't know. I guess we'll find out. Overall, number one seed for the men, Auburn, which I haven't watched a whole lot of college basketball during the course of the season, but this past week I did watch quite a bit of basketball, especially the SEC tournament, because it was really compelling. A lot of good teams in the SEC this year. I think they put like 13, 14 teams in the field, something like that. It's a record number for the SEC. Auburn, the overall number one seed, they were not the most impressive team, I didn't think, in the SEC tournament. But again, I didn't see them play through the course of the entire season. They were number one, along with Duke, Houston, and Florida. Florida was really impressive winning the SEC conference title this past weekend. They were really impressive. So those are the top four seeds. Ohio State's women are a four seed in the Birmingham region in the women's March Madness tournament. They will be playing Montana State in the first round. Now, again, on the women's side, the first two rounds of the tournament are at home sites. And so the Buckeyes will host the first two rounds at Value City. Is that how it works, or they just happen to be at Ohio State? Do they host, or is that, I don't know that much about the women's tournament. Anyway, it says here the Buckeyes will host the first two rounds of the tournament at Value City Arena. OSU, the women were a two seed last year and lost at home to Duke in the second round. So let's see here. There are a couple of Ohio teams in the men's field. Akron is the MAC winner, will face Arizona in the opening round. And Xavier takes on Texas in the first four, the so-called play-in games. And that actually works out well for Xavier, because those are played at the University of Dayton, so right up the road from Xavier, whereas Texas has to make a long trek to Dayton for that opening round, that first four game. So if they advance, if Xavier advances, they would then take on Illinois in the first round over the weekend, this weekend. So fill in out your bracket. Who do you like? Who are your upsets? What do you think of the overall field there? I think Florida. I mean, again, they were really, really impressive in the Duke. What, North Carolina actually got in the South Regional. They will play San Diego State in the first four game. And I thought they played really well at times during the ACC tournament, but they've struggled this season. But turning it on, it seemed to me anyway, turning it on at a good time. So Anyway, a lot of interesting matchups, a lot of interesting games, as there always are. March Madness getting underway. Let the madness begin. This is kind of interesting. Among the first things you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, something to think about as you are starting another work week. We've all heard that phrase, fake it till you make it. But this approach could lead to burnout. Researchers at the University of Mississippi have found that individuals who surface act at work are more likely to experience mental exhaustion. By that, they mean those who put on a happy face, a positive attitude, or project a positive attitude when they're really not feeling it. In other words, when they're faking it, they are more likely to experience mental exhaustion. However, those who are genuinely trying to feel those emotions do not experience the same effect. So it's a difference between whether you're just putting on a brave face, knowing that you are not, you know, really into doing your job, but you're trying to put on a brave face, faking it till you make it. That is not good. But if you are genuinely trying, that does not lead to the same level of mental exhaustion. Also, when customers detect that a front-facing employee, a public-facing employee, is being fake, the customers tend to be less kind, which can compound the burnout or the mental exhaustion that employees feel. So kind of the snowball effect. This, again, research from the University of Mississippi and Lebanese American University working together on this project. Other reports have shown that 63% of salespeople struggle with mental health issues. There are a couple of things at play here, the researchers say. Your individual self and your organizational self. The best way forward would be when these two different identities are aligned. So look for those jobs that are in agreement in terms of who you are, is the bottom line. Something to think about as you get another work day started. And fake it till you make it does not work. But if you genuinely are trying to project a positive attitude, to be positive, you're genuinely trying, then you can avoid that burnout. And it may not be successful, but you should genuinely try, I guess is the bottom line there. Let's see. It's harder to do that in the era of social media. I saw this story from Simon Fraser University, found that social media can be a breeding ground for delusional thinking. And I thought to myself, well, this is research from the file of duh. Social media can be a breeding ground for delusional thinking, which is linked to narcissism, body dysmorphia, anorexia, and erotomania, which is the belief that a celebrity is in love with you. When posting on social media, you might imagine what other audience members, people who read your post, are thinking. That is a mental skill heightened in those with certain disorders. Professor Bernard Crespi says social media is creating conditions where delusions can more easily be generated and sustained. Plus, social media allows us the absence of effective reality checking. So we're doing all of this in a vacuum without any sort of reality check. Research, they say, could help social media platforms consider ways to minimize psychological harm, as if they wanted to. I don't know, but I just thought that was interesting. Probably the least surprising research I have ever read about. Social media can be a breeding ground for delusional thinking. Thank you for telling us what I think we already inherently knew. You know, that's... And lastly here, among the first things that you need to know, get your Monday morning started. This is Spring Severe Weather Awareness Week in Ohio. A little bit later on, we're going to talk about reviewing your emergency plan, preparing for severe storms, lightning, tornadoes, floods. Let's not forget about that. All of the spring rain and all of the, you never know, all kinds of emergencies that we can face during the spring. Just over the weekend, there were tornadoes down south. Already some severe spring weather rolling through parts of the country. Recent research shows that the general public may not know the difference between a tornado watch and a tornado warning. Researchers from the University of Nebraska say confusion regarding these terms could result in delayed reactions of the public. So again, a tornado warning means that a tornado has been detected or visually confirmed and that you should take action immediately. A tornado watch means conditions are favorable for tornadoes to form and to be prepared to act quickly should conditions escalate. The average lead time for tornado warnings these days, 13 minutes, which is a lot more than just even a decade or two ago when we got maybe a couple minutes warning. So technology has definitely improved, but tornado warning versus tornado watch. And the same thing for severe thunderstorms and floods and, you know, all that. Watches mean conditions are favorable. Warnings mean there is a dangerous situation happening right now. And they haven't changed that at all over the years. I'm surprised that this research shows that people don't understand the difference, don't know what the difference is, but apparently so. So now is the time to refresh your memory on those terms as well. Spring Severe Weather Awareness Week in Ohio. There you go. By the way, the statewide tornado drill is, what, on Wednesday of this week, so something to keep in mind. So long as we don't have actual severe weather, if there is a threat, they will postpone, delay that, or what have you. But I don't think we're going to run into that in any event. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Monday morning started here.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Mostly sunny skies expected today with a high in the mid-40s. Partly cloudy tonight, low around 40. State lawmakers are pushing for increased fines for drivers who speed excessively on Ohio roads.
House Bill 111, introduced by Republican Representatives Kevin Miller of Newark and Rodney Creech of West Alexandria, would add a $200 fine to tickets for drivers who exceed posted speed limits by 30 miles per hour or more. An offender could also receive an additional fine for distracted driving, according to the bill. More than 6,000 speed-related crashes on Ohio highways have been reported this year. The bill has been referred to the House Public Safety Committee.
ONN's Kate Burdett reporting. Two local agencies have earned the designation of being an Ohio recovery-friendly workplace. The recognition highlights a commitment to supporting employees who may be impacted by substance use disorders or mental health challenges. The two local agencies recognized are Hancock County Adamus, the Hancock County Board of Alcohol, Drug Addiction, and Mental Health Services, and Focus Recovery and Wellness Community. Adamus Executive Director Precious Stubbe said they're honored to join a growing number of businesses and organizations across Ohio dedicated to creating healthier, more resilient workplaces. Get more details on the Ohio Recovery Friendly Workplace designation and the two local agencies recognized in this story on our website. The Findlay-Hancock County Public Library is inviting community members to be the final judges in their Youth Library Card Design Contest. In February, children and teens were encouraged to showcase their artistic talents and submit a design for use on all new youth library cards. The library says it was overwhelmed with the response, and a committee narrowed the entries down to three finalists. The library is now turning the judging duties over to community members to choose the final winner, who will be announced as part of National Library Week in April. See the three finalists in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
And now our cover story this morning. State Representative Ty Matthews is with us on the line. I'll talk more about his role. He has just been named the vice chairman of the newly formed Doge Caucus in the Ohio House. Ms. Matthews, thanks very much for taking the time, as always. We appreciate it. Before we get to the Doge Caucus, which is really interesting, and I know you've actually talked about that on this program before, wanting to set something up along these lines, I am curious. Last week, the governor delivered his State of the State address. Kind of interested in your reaction to the governor's message last week.
Yeah, a lot. First off, good morning, Chris. Always great to be on. But Governor's State of State, I thought overall it's very solid. Obviously, things that we go back and forth with between the House and the governor, and we submitted all of our budget amendments last week for our side of the budget, and we'll see what gets kind of ironed out and what the final product's going to be. One of the things that I thought was fairly interesting that I really do find myself kind of maybe a man waving a flag over here with a no country on it is this cell phones and school ban. DeWine talked about banning cell phones across the state, and I am actually opposed to that. I believe that decision is probably best decided at the local level. You know, I really want to empower our local school districts, our superintendents, school boards, to make that decision. My personal opinion, I do not believe a cell phone should be in class. And, you know, that's already a policy. It's, you know, when I'm thinking about the parent sending their kid to school, you know, that concern, having a cell phone out in the cafeteria, you know, I'm not sure how much that really impacts the student. But right now, that's kind of where I'm at.
There were a lot of items in the State of the State speech, kind of like the governor's budget, that focused on youth and families. Was there anything that kind of jumped out at you where you can say, yeah, I can really get on board with this? This is something that we really do need to do in the state of Ohio.
Yeah, you know, I thought, and this kind of goes back to the last year's State of the State. There's a program where actually the state treasurer, Robert Sprague, ran through a program which he calls Results Ohio, which is a performance-based metric approach to funding. Essentially that these groups that are running any type of pilot program out in Ohio, whatever area you're from, they put up the capital first, and once they prove that model, then they receive state funding. And I really like that concept because as a taxpayer, our dollars aren't just being thrown at an issue. And I say that because it was a proven concept that I thought was a really, really good product for our kids was mobile eyeglasses clinics. You know, we're seeing in Appalachia, you know, even the grades of certain students are, you know, fairly low. One of the links there is they don't have access to eye care. So they stood up a mobile clinic. Each one of these kids received a pair of eyeglasses, and they even saw, you know, students' grades raised once they received a pair of glasses. So when I see programs like that the governor's talked about that we could put through this Results Ohio program that the treasurer runs, I think is a really great way of looking at public policy, but also helping our children.
That actually kind of piggybacks very nicely into what we wanted to talk about, and that is the Doge Caucus. Now, the last time that you were with us on the program, you talked about wanting to set up something similar to the president's idea of looking at government efficiency, where we could cut, eliminate, consolidate various functions of the state government. And it appears that you and a number of other legislators were kind of on the same page in the Ohio House with this.
Yeah, I'll walk you through the caucus here really fast and make sure there's certain distinctions made, right? So this was a group that a couple Republican lawmakers got together and formed. So this is not an actual governing body.
Right.
What we are hoping out of this group is with the diverse thought from across the state, of developing ideas that we could take to the legislature on ways that we can make government more efficient. Obviously, there's a diverse and different, you know, we're all on the different spectrum of conservatism on this caucus. It's about 25 members. Tex Fisher is the chair. I'm a vice co-chair with Ron Ferguson. And what I really hope to bring to the table and what I was talking about, I believe it was a few weeks back with you, Chris, is what I'm calling a committee of government efficiency, and what I'm really looking at is shared services. I word it like this. You know, sometimes you do need a machete to start cutting, right? And there's a lot of waste. Sometimes you need a scalpel because we don't know the full repercussions of cutting certain programs to a certain extent.
And
right?
at the federal level, that's something that we're kind of discovering, that maybe the machete theory is not the best way of cutting.
And that's what we can learn from the, you know, the Fed's mistakes. And I really do think they're doing a great job overall. But, you know, here at the state of Ohio, looking what we can do here, seeing redundancies within government and, you know, duplicative programs. You know, at the end of the day, if you were to ask me, so why do this, Ty? You know, why do this? One, I think it's great for the taxpayer, you know, really getting the bang for our buck. But I believe that government is for the people. And when I hear complaints that someone tries to get a hold of someone in the Department of Medicaid, and then they're, you know, pushed over to the Department of Health, and then they're pushed over to a different agency, what I'm really looking for is an end product where that government is efficient. So when that person calls an agency, they can either get an answer right away, instead of having all these different programs out there. So taking a time just so we can get some actual legislation put together that I've already got drafted, seeing if it passes the House, and then creating this actual committee, legislative committee, potentially with the auditor's office, of looking, hey, where are programs failing performance audits? Where are these programs that are in multiple agencies that we can consolidate and save all of us in the state of Ohio money?
So, and that speaks to one of the questions that I have with the DOGE caucus. Obviously, you do not have the kind of authority that the Department of Government Efficiency at the federal level has been given to broadly make actual cuts. This is not something that you are able to do as part of this caucus. So how do you envision implementing some of the efficiencies that you seek to uncover and identify?
That's right, Chris. We are not a government entity. We're just a bunch of lawmakers getting in a room and trying to look at different programs right now, or different ways, right? I'm really giving you my view on this, right? Someone else in that caucus has a whole different idea on what the potential, you know, legislation could come from this. But when you're asking me, I remember when I entered the state treasurer's office, the Office of Budget Management had a price transparency program within their office that was essentially, you know, you could go up and look up public funds and how they're being spent. Well, the state treasurer's office with the open checkbook had been running that for a little while. So they had two of the almost exact same programs running. We were paying for the different software as the taxpayer. And, you know, what Robert did was they were able to create that a shared service. They collapsed that into the open checkbook, and now that one agency runs that. So my hope is to really eye down programs like that, you know, what is out there that is very similar to that being done maybe in another agency, collapse that and see what savings we have. But also very open to hearing, you know, from the public, you know, if you see government waste or you see ways that we could make your experience with the government better, please share that with us. That's really what the purpose of this is. It's not that Ty Matthews is in Columbus just swinging a machete around, right? I want to really look at how we can make government more efficient for the people.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. I mean, you mentioned Medicaid as an example of some of the ineffectiveness or inefficiencies within a state government. Do you have specific targets in mind, or anything that you have already specifically seen that you would like to target for either elimination, consolidation, or making more efficient?
There has been talk in different committees about this, and this is going to be really one of the issues we focus on as a General Assembly this session. where I'm looking at low-hanging fruit, in my opinion, is I believe that if you are on Medicaid and you are able, if you're an able body, that you should be able to provide that you are working to receive that Medicaid. I think that's a simple solution for me. You know, that may not link, like, to me, it does link to cost savings, because I think people will actually wean off the program. It's right now Medicaid makes up more than, you know, healthcare overall. It makes up, I think, over 53% of our state's budget.
Right.
You know, so it's quite the pot of money.
Yeah. And again, you know, the next big item on the agenda is the state budget. Can you use that to sort of wield some authority to force some of these efficiencies?
Yes, and we are already doing that. So the caucus really came in, you know, it was very helpful this last week of the budget, where we all got together and looked at, hey, we're in the governor's budget. Do we see that we could cut? You know, where are those dollar-saving items, budget items that we can just eliminate? And we did that. You know, we're going to see what the final product is. So, you know, we're still in the process of that. But kind of going back to what we talked about at the beginning here, Chris, I really like this Results Ohio program.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously we can't run every single state program through this or pilot project, but it has a wide breadth that we can. And I really like the idea of, hey, if you're going to receive state taxpayer dollars,
right,
you've got to prove that this program works, so we're just not endlessly funding programs that just keep receiving state tax dollars. Let's see the metrics up front, and then we will fund it.
Again, State Representative Ty Matthews this morning sharing his thoughts on the Governor's State of the State address last week and his role as vice chairman of this newly formed DOGE caucus in the Ohio House, which we will watch closely as it kind of goes through the process and we get through the budget process as well. I'm sure we'll talk again on this topic. And Ty, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris. Have a great day.
Spring arrives this week officially, and this is Spring Severe Weather Awareness Week in Ohio. Statewide tornado drill will happen on Wednesday, but all week we're focusing on severe weather awareness. Time to review your emergency plan, prepare for spring storms and severe storms, tornadoes, lightning, floods, all of that. Todd James is with us here in the North Central Ohio chapter of the American Red Cross. March is also Red Cross Month.
It is, yes.
So it goes along very nicely with that. And you just got back from Kentucky, where you once again witnessed firsthand what can happen in severe weather situations.
Yeah, the folks down in eastern Kentucky, unfortunately, suffered once again through just massive flooding in that area.
Yeah.
And this is a repeat of some, you know, they had this again just a couple of years ago. I was down there for that event, and a few years before that, another major flood. You know, we are seeing, and we have seen over the last 10, 20 years, as the climate continues to change for whatever reason,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're able to see the effects of of the number and the severity of disasters that
right.
we're responding to.
Yeah.
An increase of, you know, let's say 30 years ago, we were going to maybe $3 or $4 billion disasters a year, the really big ones.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd always have, you know, we'd go and we'd be there for a long time like everybody else that's helping. And then you'd have time at least to catch your breath. And,
yeah.
Last year we had $28 billion. And it is
wow.
just, you know, if you look on the graph, and I mean, we keep setting records for the number of these mm-hmm. huge disasters,
right.
things that we've never seen before, like a hurricane in the Appalachians. And North, I mean,
right.
poor North Carolina,
right.
you know, started the year off or early, last year, ended the year
mm-hmm.
Flooded and damaged from the hurricane so severe. And then a few weeks ago, wildfire threats.
Yeah.
There. I mean, we're responding to so many of these disasters, one after the other. And,
right.
and so we really want folks to do their part before the disasters happen, which is to be aware and
right.
to be prepared for what to do when the weather comes.
Right. So this being Spring Severe Weather Awareness Week, again, tornadoes is the first thing that we obviously think of. And
yep.
already there have been some of those in the Deep South just this past weekend. But really, severe storms, the biggest thing in severe storms is actually lightning.
Lightning, high winds, you know, we we have a propensity for those around this area. Mm-hmm. So yes, tornadoes, I think, are what first jumped to mind, but severe thunderstorms, power outages, all the things that go along with that weather, you need to be prepared beforehand. Make sure your family has your emergency kit ready, and that's, you know, that's that 3 day of basic supplies that you need to have, whether you have to shelter in place or if you have to evacuate your home. You need to have a plan for what you're going to do in severe weather. When the tornado warning goes off, and that's one of the big things, especially if you have small children, making sure everybody understands what to watch and listen for. What's the difference between a tornado watch and a tornado warning?
We were talking about that a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
The difference.
Yeah. Making sure you have good information. Have you signed up for the text alerts from WFIN or the Courier or another news source? You know, mm-hmm. Do you have several different ways of getting information if you don't can't have your cell phone for some reason? Do you have an emergency weather radio that's right. got fresh batteries or an alternative power source? You've got to be able to stay up to date on good information and have a plan for what you and your family are going to do. You need to have that plan in place and make sure everybody is aware of it, knows it, practices it before the storm hits.
And that goes for all of these things, yeah. Severe storms, high winds, tornadoes, floods. Obviously, you don't have to tell people here how much damage floods yes. Can do. And we're talking about when we talk about floods, you're talking about, you know, flooding a la the 2008 flood, yeah. But also flash floods, which can be equally or in some cases even more dangerous.
And again, a lot of what we've been seeing the last few years, a lot of what I've gone out to have been these huge rain events, mm-hmm. and I've seen these more often that we get this system that'll just park in place and just dump rain on an area, huge amounts of rain in a short period of time. And you're mm-hmm. exactly right. That's when we see the flash flooding. And it's not something that we deal with a lot necessarily here, but very possible if we were to get the right conditions, you know, mm-hmm. the creeks, the sure. rivers. It doesn't take long for them to fill up, and when that water starts moving, happens in a flash.
Right.
That's what we talk about, you know, turn around, don't drown. You never know how fast that water's moving, whether it's across the road or in a creek that's running through your backyard. You know, when we see that kind of flooding and that kind of rain, you just need to stay away from the water and be very aware of your surroundings.
You know, see, here's one of the other things that is important when we talk about making plans and knowing and being prepared, knowing what to do, what not to do is equally important, whether, again, we're talking about seeking shelter from a storm, a tornado possibly, lightning, where is it, where are you safe, where are you not safe, those kind of things are important as well.
You know, we've got great information on our website at redcross.org/prepare. We have the whole Be Red Cross Ready program. You know, I can come to your business, to your school, if you belong to a group like a Kiwanis or a Rotary, you're looking for a guest speaker. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of these teaching folks those three steps: how to get a kit, how to make a plan, how to be prepared, be aware ahead of time, knowing not what to do, what not to do. So give us a call or email, just reach out, and we're glad to share that information. You can download a lot of stuff off the website. You know, one of the things we get asked most often is, if a tornado is coming, where do I go?
Yeah.
That's a great question. And again, depending on where you are, if you're in your home, mm-hmm. If you don't have a basement, you want to make sure you're getting to the lowest floor of your house, to an interior room with no windows if possible.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in a mobile home, you need to get out. That is not a safe place to be in a high wind or a tornado event. So that means ahead of time, you need to know where you're going to go. Maybe it's going to be that you're going to go to the nearest fire station. Maybe there's a building within your mobile home park, a nice sturdy building. Maybe it's the library. But you need to identify and let your family know ahead of time, where are we going if those sirens go off?
Right. The reason I brought that up in terms of what to do, what not to do, is we're coming up on spring sports season, a lot mm-hmm. of outdoor sports, so you get baseball and soccer and, you know, all of these things, and invariably storms will pop up and you'll still see people go to like a picnic shelter or something like that. That's not safe.
Yeah.
You're not going to get wet from the rain, but not safe from a lightning. So again, knowing what are and aren't the same safe places to go to.
Exactly. Very important. And just being aware of your surroundings and being in touch if there's any chance of threatening weather, mm-hmm. you know, continuing to listen to the radio, to watch whatever source you have for good weather information and for alerts, that you are paying attention to that and that you and your family are ready when the alert comes.
Yeah. And everybody is on the same page. You know where you're going to, because yeah. when you hear the alarm or, you know, when an emergency is yeah. happening, that's not the time to decide, oh, where do we want to go, you know, for an emergency.
And I know, you know, the big thing, one of the things I've learned over the years and have heard, unfortunately, from way too many people is that, you know, when those sirens, when the alarms go off, you've got to pay attention to them.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you know, we get in this mindset of, oh, nothing will happen. Nothing ever does.
Right.
But, you know, it's that one time that something does.
Right.
And that one
right.
time can happen. Anytime we're seeing it, you know, the folks in Eastern Kentucky, I'll go back to that. If you'd have asked them 20 years ago, would they have dealt with, you know, three massive flooding events in their area?
Mm-hmm.
There's no way they would have said that could happen
right.
here. And we had a record-setting year for tornadoes in Ohio last year.
Yeah.
We saw the damage that happened at Indian Lake. We've seen
right.
Dayton. I mean, we're seeing that shift in the pattern, whatever pattern that may be, of where
well, yeah.
you know the track for Tornado Alley is starting to come into Ohio, it looks like.
It always is something that, again, we talked about you mentioned the Indian Lake tornado last yeah. year, and a few years ago they had ones up in to our
oh, yeah,
north.
Up in our, yeah, part of our chapter here up in the Lorain area.
Right, and I look at that and I say, you know, that's meteorologically, that's really, really close.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it may be an hour's drive,
yeah.
but when you think of it meteorologically, that's a really close call.
It really is.
To us. So, yeah, these things can happen anytime. Again, it is Ohio Spring Severe Weather Awareness Week. The statewide tornado drill will be happening on Wednesday. We have more information on our webpage from the folks of the state of Ohio on spring severe weather awareness. Now is the time to start thinking about that. And again, Todd James of the North Central Ohio chapter of the American Red Cross with us this morning. Todd, as always, thanks very much for dropping by.
Thank you, Chris. You have a great day.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
An elderly Toledo man says he is out $800 because of a mistake made by Toledo firefighters. This is really a shame. 75-year-old Ronald Jensen Sr. says he was at a doctor's appointment last month when firefighters kicked in the side door of his home in order to gain entry after a caller to emergency dispatch had provided the wrong address. Oops! Mr. Jensen says he tried to file a claim with the city but was denied because at the end of the day, it wasn't the firefighters, it wasn't the dispatch operators that made the mistake. It was the person who called in the report in the first place that provided a bad address. I mean, the firefighters went to the address that had been given to them. The dispatch gave them the address that the caller had given them. It turned out to be the wrong address. So the city says, hey, ain't our fault. Mr. Jensen now says he had to pay for a replacement door out of his own pocket. That's terrible. Somebody set up a GoFundMe for that elderly gentleman there. That really stinks. Oh, man. Elsewhere in the broken news, the odd and unusual side of the headlines, a man in Slidell, Louisiana is facing prison time for taping the mouths of three students shut at a school. Should mention that John Raymond is a pastor and this was a Christian school. Taped three students' mouths shut. Mr. Raymond, the former headmaster at Lakeside Christian School in Slidell, Louisiana, used packing tape to silence three kids who he said were talking too much in class. It was pretty effective, but you're not allowed to do that. Mr. Raymond was convicted of cruelty to juveniles and sentenced to 2 years in prison plus 3 years probation. If he posts a $100,000 bond, he can stay out of jail while he appeals his conviction. You would think that a pastor would know better. let's see. Now, this is this is a little unusual. It's a fun collection of broken news this morning. The Virginia Zoo has responded to rumors of an escaped gorilla by, number one, confirming that all of its animals are present and accounted for, and number two, pointing out that the zoo does not have any gorillas to begin with. Apparently, people on social media went nuts after a power outage on Tuesday. Facebook users in the area reported seeing a large primate on the loose. Oh my gosh, there's a gorilla loose from the Virginia Zoo. The zoo points out, we don't have any gorillas. So it's not ours. If there's a gorilla out there, it ain't ours. The Virginia Zoo actually suspects that the sightings were actually its mascot, Zoo Squatch. Zoo Squatch is on the loose. We heard talk of an escaped gorilla, but we believe it may have just been Zoo Squatch spotted on his daily run, according to a Facebook post by the zoo. Should there ever be a real animal escape from our facility, a formal statement will be issued by our spokesperson to all local media, as well as on social media, to make sure that people are aware. But it's no escaped gorilla. It's just Zoo Squatch. I'm not sure that that makes me feel any better, that Zoo Squatch is out there on the run as opposed to an escaped gorilla. I mean, I'm not sure that it's any better. Always got to be something out of Florida, and here is today's Sunshine State fun. Florida man by the name of John Elberson has been accused of unlawfully obtaining gyrations from an exotic dancer. Unlawfully obtaining gyrations from an exotic dancer. That's the charge. Mr. Elberson allegedly went to the Rain Ladies and Gents Club in Clearwater. Police say he enjoyed several lap dances valued at $160, but then claimed he didn't have the funds to settle his bill. Well, let that be a lesson to you. Get the money up front. It's not like you can take the lap dances back. You can't repossess the lap dances. Get your money up front. A deputy noted that Mr. Elberson, at his arrest, at the time of his arrest, appeared to be under the influence of alcohol. What a shocker. He spent 12 hours in jail and has been advised to stay away from Rain's Ladies and Gents Club in the future. And I don't know whether the lap dancer is going to press charges. And finally, in the broken news this morning, this is a story out of the state of Illinois. A flag, an official flag, in this case, the flag of the great state of Illinois. You think flags engender loyalty and pride. They are emblems of our citizenship, our collective citizenship, and they often get nicknames like Old Glory, the Union Jack, the Maple Leaf for our friends in Canada, and in Illinois, the SOB. Their state flag is nicknamed the SOB, which stands for Seal on a Bedsheet. Yeah, apparently it's a derisive moniker with which some have burdened the Illinois state flag, because there's really not much to it. It's very basic. It's a gleaming white banner emblazoned with the state's bald eagle-themed emblem. So it's just not very exciting, and people labeled it the SOB, seal on a bedsheet. Some forward-thinking lawmakers in Illinois got tired of people, you know, making fun of their state flag, so they just set up a contest to design a new state flag, and they put it to a vote. In a landslide, the winner was the current state flag. People overwhelmingly chose to stick with the SOB. The candidates for a new design included 10. There were 10 new designs alongside the current one and two former editions of the flag. And when the count was over, 43% of the nearly 385,000 votes cast supported keeping the flag just as it is. However, the controversy is not over just yet. The General Assembly of the state of Illinois gets the final say. However, the lawmaker who started all of this doubts that there will be an appetite to change the flag given the overwhelming vote for the status quo. So the SOB is alive and well in Illinois. Seal on a bed sheet. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Your home for Cleveland Guardians baseball is WFIN.
Swung on, hit high, hit deep to left. There she goes.
Hear a select schedule of spring training games, all leading up to the season opener on Thursday, March 27th at Kansas City. Your home of the Guardians is 1330 WFIN and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. This is perfect for a Monday morning. According to statistics from ActiveTrack, the American workday is shorter now than it was 3 years ago. The average workday today ends at 4:39 p.m., which is quite a bit earlier than the quitting time in 2022, which was 5:21 p.m. So we have lopped off nearly an hour from our workday compared to 3 years ago. In total, average American workers work 8 hours and 41 minutes a day in 2025. 8 hours, 41 minutes. Despite the shorter work time, productivity is actually up 2%. So employers, don't worry about productivity taking a hit. It's actually up. According to Gabriella Mauch of ActiveTrack Productivity Lab, these are healthy numbers. Figures are based on 200,000 workers at 800 different companies. And it's kind of interesting. Our country still lags behind most of the developed world in terms of work-life balance. In Finland, for example, workers work for about 7 hours and 44 minutes a day. So we're still almost an hour longer than that. I suppose this is probably a good time to mention that I am going to be taking most of the week off. We'll be here today and tomorrow and then taking the rest of the week off. Well, you may not know this, but it really is not a surprise if you really think about it. The U.S. Postal Service has one of the largest motor vehicle fleets in America. More than 246,000 postal vehicles drive over a billion miles a year, delivering mail to over 168 million homes, businesses, and other delivery points across the nation. During the month of March, the USPS is promoting its Motor Vehicle Safe Driving campaign. And joining us this morning is U.S. Postal Service Safety Awareness Specialist Scott Miller. Scott, those are some pretty amazing numbers. Easy to see why vehicle safety is so important for the Postal Service.
Absolutely, Chris. Motor vehicle safety is one of the top priorities for the Postal Service. And what makes our campaign unique this time is that we're asking for the public's help, right? We are out there on the road together. And together, hopefully, we can make the roads a safer place to be. Whether distracted driving, speeding, failure to stop for vehicles. You know, these small mistakes, unfortunately, you know, they can lead to some significant consequences out there.
Yeah. Obviously, all of those are important things for just general driving safety, but especially when you're around postal vehicles, most of those vehicles are generally slow moving, making frequent stops and so on. They are maneuvering on the road more than most regular vehicles. And so naturally, they need more room to do so.
Absolutely. So we're asking the public, you know, when you do see these vehicles out there delivering, making their stops, just to slow down, right? Give our vehicles plenty of space and always be ready to stop if necessary. If we're going to stop, if we're going to start, you know, if we're stopped at a mailbox, servicing that box and delivering the mail, we are going to go to that next mailbox and do the same thing. So we're probably going to be moving in a very short period of time. So, you know, just slow down those extra couple of seconds, see what we're doing, and try to maneuver around us in the safest possible way.
Yeah, you know, you bring that point up, and it's one thing that I'm sure you see all the time. I have to admit that I am guilty of it as well. And I'm sure it makes drivers nervous. Is hurrying to get around a postal service vehicle as they are pulled over delivering to a mailbox. What should drivers do when we see, or, you know, the other thing is postal trucks, mail trucks may actually be parked on the side of the road as a carrier is out walking to do, you know, some of those deliveries. So what should us regular drivers do when we encounter those vehicles?
Right. So awareness and patience, right? Two things that people don't want to hear when they want to get to their next destination as fast as possible in this crazy world, right? So just be patient. You know, if the letter carrier is in their vehicle, you know, give them the extra space and the extra couple of seconds. Or if you see that your vehicle is parked in your neighborhood, you know that your carrier is probably delivering somewhere in that neighborhood. So, you know, be aware, keep your walkways clear, make sure that your pets and animals are secure inside so that we can deliver safely to you.
Yeah. Do mail truck drivers get special training for operating those vehicles?
They absolutely do. We have a national driving program, and it is central to installing our culture of safety and accountability with our employees out there. We have a comprehensive suite of safety protocols that we teach, including situational awareness. Mm-hmm. And we train our drivers how to anticipate potential hazards, right? The unknown, and to handle adverse weather conditions. You know, we are out there 365 days a year in any kind of weather. So that is a big issue for us as well. And how to safely navigate, you know, our busy urban streets and cities out there.
So you can train the drivers for the U.S. Postal Service. What would your top tip be to give the public to avoid accidents with postal vehicles?
Well, Chris, our top tip for our public out there would be a defensive driver and stay aware and alert. Try to anticipate what the other driver is going to do. I know that sometimes hard as fast as we're going, and some drivers are unpredictable out there. But when we're delivering our mail out there, that is usually pretty predictable for you. So maintain that safe following distance and avoiding distractions, right? We all know that distracted driving is a huge issue out there with cell phone usage, people wearing earbuds while they're driving. You know, just curbing some of these simple habits can significantly reduce your risk of getting into a motor vehicle accident.
Yeah. And again, all of those would apply just in your everyday regular driving, but especially when you add in a postal service vehicle into the mix there as well. And I guess we should also mention that it's not just other drivers. I mean, if we're out on a walk, if we're riding our bike, we may encounter USPS vehicles as well. What is something that many people may overlook when it comes to, you know, some of these encounters, however they may happen?
Absolutely. So because we are out there every single day, we may blend right into your background. You may not even notice us out there, right? So, you know, we are making multiple stops and often in unexpected places. So whether you are driving a vehicle or whether you are walking, you know, we encourage parents with small children, you know, don't run up to the mail truck behind it or run up along the side. You know, unfortunately, there are blind spots out there as well. So give us a safe distance out there, you know, and be prepared for those southern stops, you know, whether you are driving, walking, cycling out there. And also, unfortunately, blind spots are an issue. So for our public out there, a big part is when you're pulling out of your driveway, you know, always be cautious of what's behind there. We've had, unfortunately, postal vehicles hit driving by, or they could be servicing a box on the other side of the road. So always be aware when you are backing out of your driveway.
Yeah, because if you think about it, that's where our mailbox is, at the end of our driveway. So definitely need to be cognizant of those locations. So again, U.S. Postal Service Safety Awareness Specialist Scott Miller with us this morning. Where can we get more information about the USPS Motor Vehicle Safe Driving Campaign in the month of March?
Well, Chris, your listeners can find out more information at USPS.com and on social media at hashtag USPS Vehicle Awareness.
Very important in the month of March, very important all year round. Scott, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Great to be with you today, Chris. Thank you.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program, of course. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, and that is goodmornings.net. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.